Hello and welcome to another episode of the Kids Media Club podcast. I'm Andy Williams.
And I'm Jo Redfern, and we are without Emily today, but don't worry, she has supplied us a question for the wonderful Steve DiPianco, who joins us today. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Jo. Nice to be with you.
Well, we're super happy to have you along to talk all things Roblox, which is something that you and I have been talking about for a while, actually. We first met and did a bit of work together over a year ago. But I want you to start just by giving us a bit of an intro to your background, because I think there's some interesting parallels in terms of what you did many years ago before you then came into this world of Roblox that we're in at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So yeah, my background started off as a filmmaker, producer. I worked on a short film that won an Academy Award for Best Live Action Short Film called God of Love. And then I transitioned really into the sort of video space, YouTube, became a YouTuber myself and worked with PBS as they were launching PBS Digital Studios, really trying to understand how to reach new audiences on a new platform. You know, this was 12, 13 years ago. And so very much was part of that initiative, and then spent more time working in the digital video space, worked with YouTube, worked with a linear television company, Ovation Television, helped them work with YouTubers, influencers, connect those with the linear network. Also worked at Verizon, helped them with their streaming app, Go90, oversaw sports programming, ran a startup, got really, I guess, and it was focused on kids entertainment, got really, really focused on marketing and direct to consumer and how to build product. And then now, yeah, I've been focused on Roblox for about 2 years and see a lot of similarities for sure between where Roblox is now, attracting brands, trying to scale, trying to monetize, and where YouTube was, you know, 10 plus years ago.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's a very active conversation, the kind of parallels that we see between the growth of Roblox and the growth of YouTube. But, you know, interesting to hear that you have a background very much in kids media and you have kind of followed this exodus from perhaps more traditional platforms towards Roblox. So just give us a bit of a 101 on Roblox. You know, we hear about the big headline stats on usage. You know, what is it in a nutshell as far as you're concerned, Roblox?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, on one hand, it's very much, right, it's a platform, right? So, and it's a platform that supports user-generated content. So very similar to a YouTube, right? Like Roblox isn't out there making games. It's not one single game, right? There's like over 15 million games that people played last year. And so it reminds me of YouTube as, you know, it's a platform, but instead of videos being created, it's games, right? So users creating games. And then along with that, the other just sort of thing that's really striking is the, you know, how much time people spend on the platform. So on average, about 2.5 hours per day per daily active user. And that's just a long time, right? In a world where you know, attention is so hard to get a hold of, let alone maintain, 2.5 hours is really impressive.
That's really interesting. And what would you say are the biggest misconceptions about Roblox, do you think?
Well, so yeah, I mean, I think that there's just a lot of confusion in general, lack of awareness as to what the platform is, right? So even just starting with that very basic, oh, think of it as like a YouTube, but focused on gaming. I think that helps a lot of people just sort of be able to get a grasp of it, because I think it's something, at least for me, when it first entered my sort of, you know, world, yeah, I didn't get it at first. And so if I had heard that type of thing, oh, YouTube, but for gaming, I think that helps, like, eliminate a lot of confusion. I think that, you know, certainly there's a lot of similarities to like a Minecraft in a sense, in terms of like, look, there's, you know, by and large, it's known for like more fairly simplistic graphics. That's not to say that you can't create something that looks really impressive, really, you know, more high fidelity. But I think that, you know, it certainly has sort of those types of, you know, thoughts around it in terms of how it shows up. And then the last thing for sure is, like, I think this belief that it's exclusively kids, right? Certainly it's very strong with kids. I would say, you know, in the age ranges of, like, you know, 8 to 12, it's really strong. But that's not to say that there aren't 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 year olds who are also active on the platform. And really, from folks who I've talked to, those people who are older are not like new users. Those are users who have grown up playing on the platform, spending time there. And so it really is because the platform has been around a long time, even though it really has taken off, you know, certainly a huge surge during the pandemic and still being able to grow even after that. It's been around for so long that it has a really strong community that's really grown up on the platform.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize that actually it's 18 years old, Roblox. So actually, yeah, it's perhaps longer in the tooth than many would realize. And that in itself is something that's really interesting when you speak to some of the developers on the platform who have developed some of the really big experiences that sit there right at the top of the pile. And they tell you, oh, I've made my first experience 13 years ago. And to a lot of people, certainly within kind of kids media, they're like, did Roblox even exist 13 years ago? Yeah, it did. It just really didn't take off until the pandemic. But that means that there's this whole cohort of creators on the platform who have been busy plying their trade for a while, and their experience and their knowledge is vast. Sorry, Andy, I cut in.
No, I mean, I just had one question to, as somebody that's very ignorant about Roblox and not really steeped in kind of a lot of the information about it, how would you say it differs from other gaming platforms that are out there?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, I think if you just take a step back and you look at sort of gaming in general, you'll say, hey, Roblox falls in the subset of UGC gaming, right? So user-generated content. So you could say, hey, Minecraft falls into that category. You can say that Fortnite, you know, aside from the sort of battle royale and the games that Epic puts out, right? But there's a creative mode on there. So those are sort of like the big three in terms of user-generated content, UGC gaming, which is, you know, totally different from all the stuff that like Xbox and PlayStation and even like mobile gaming is putting out, right? Those are by and large professional studios. You have really super big companies, right? Nintendo, EA, you know, Activision, Blizzard, right? Like all of these big companies. That's like on one side. And then on the other side, you have these UGC gaming companies. And I think that, like, as it pertains to in the UGC gaming space, certainly Roblox is the biggest. And when you look at Roblox compared to especially like a Fortnite, like Fortnite is predominantly male, right? It's like it's reaches an older audience. And it's, you know, the key sort of game mode is a shooter, right? It's that battle royale. And so, you know, Roblox is skews more, you know, more male, but it's closer to 50-50. It's able to reach down into a younger audience, and it has, you know, a wider variety of types of games than just that shooting, right? There's tycoons and there's obbies and there's simulators and way more. And because the user generated sort of content approach has been there from the very beginning with Roblox, as opposed to Fortnite, which only added that a couple of years ago, Roblox is much further along in terms of that like tool set and sophistication to really empower creators to be able to make games.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. I think you look at, I mean, all of those points that you've made, you know, you look at Fortnite and the fidelity of the graphics and the quality tends to be much higher, but then the barriers to kind of creating on the platform feel that they're much higher. Certainly having spoken to numerous kids, my own included, who have sat down and figured out how to make their own experience on Roblox, because it's low code. You don't need a vast amount of computer science knowledge to be able to make a rudimentary experience on the platform. And very often they're just doing it just for them and their friends to kind of hang around in, not for any other reason than that. And this idea that it attracts a much more equal balance of male and female gamers is really important. And I'm going to use that as a jumping off point for the next question, really, because reaching boys and girls or young women and men equally is really important for media brands, particularly broadcasters. So Roblox obviously is really important, or becoming increasingly important to them. So how have you seen Roblox being used by established or more traditional, shall we say, media brands in the last couple of years?
Yeah, for sure. I think that certainly maybe a year and a half, within the past like year and a half, 2 years, certainly Nickelodeon was one of the first sort of big kind of kids players in the space with a experience called Nickverse, which was very much like a kind of hub and spoke experience where you had different IP that were in there, Avatar, SpongeBob. That, you know, that was an early mover. So Cartoon Network's Ben 10, that IP, it's actually still attracting millions of visits every month and was a very successful game. I think I've just sort of heard anecdotally that it was, you know, very much like a very sort of small scale test that happened to really take off and perform really well. And after that, Cartoon Network created Cartoon Network Game On, which is another sort of like, you know, sort of broadcast, again, it's a similar sort of like hub and spoke type of experience where you have different IP. I know there is sort of a section dedicated to Ben 10, but also like I think I like the DC Teen Titans series, a bunch of other ones that I wasn't as familiar with. There's been that sort of precedent set. You have certainly, I would say, like sort of one-off experiences. So if those are more like, you know, linear broadcasters, you have some, and I would call it like, you know, maybe IP, so it might be toys. Toys certainly have been like very active on the platform. So everything from, you know, Barbie, which is very successful right now, to obviously something like Sonic the Hedgehog, which is obviously kind of more gaming focused, but has certainly its own, you know, animated series and tons of products. Same with like Hello Kitty. I mean, you know, is it really, it's not really a cartoon. Maybe there's been a cartoon at some point. So plenty of those, especially that are, you know, really deep games that are really more about like true gameplay and have very deep progression, and those have performed well. And then again, on the toy side, I mean, companies like Spin Master have been super active, both sort of, you know, dipping their toes into like building experiences. They did that with Bakugan, where they streamed full episodes within their experience. And then also you have, Spin Master doing things like integrations into existing games where, you know, they're promoting the release of a new IP across popular Roblox games. So tons of activity for sure from a sort of like kids focused.
And is there anyone... any kids brands on there that you think, wow, would they really should be on here that come to mind?
Yeah. I mean, I would say that like, I mean, I'm not, you know, I don't necessarily come exclusively from the kid, you know, sort of kid space. I've seen stuff where, like, I mean, in my household, you know, Bluey is like, you know, preem, right? Like, every Bluey all the time. That, you know, I've seen some Roblox experiences where it's like, oh, this thumbnail is like Bluey, but Bluey has nothing at all to do with this game. And this game is like, and this game is super popular. Like, this game is getting, you know, lots of visits. So, like, look, I mean, to say Bluey should be, I mean, Bluey is so successful, but would it be more successful if it were on Roblox? I think so. I think they would be able, you know, certainly their brand is showing up in ways that they're not controlling now or having an input, you know, into. So, you know, that just sort of comes to mind in terms of from my experience. But to me, it's like, yeah, especially if you're trying to reach, let's say, like an older, you know, like sort of like slightly older kid. I mean, like, I don't know, like 9, 10, like before, like tween, like into like young teen. If that's your audience, then Roblox probably makes sense to some degree. Yeah. Just because there's so, the audience is so big.
I wondered, your point about Bluey made me think that even if Bluey is kind of a phenomenal hit, so even if the argument is it being on Roblox wouldn't necessarily make it any bigger, I wonder whether there's just a brand management argument for being on Roblox, because otherwise everyone's going to go on Roblox and see poor imitations of Bluey, and you're not going to actually have your own brand there for them to seek out.
For sure, for sure. I mean, I think that certainly, like, is there an audience that loves Bluey that's already on Roblox? Yes. are they being served like an inferior experience on the platform currently? Yes. And so, right, I think too, for the purposes of kind of, you know, having a more quality experience and increasing you know, the sort of like stickiness of that consumer and extending the lifetime value ultimately of that consumer, you know, meeting them where they are and showing up in a really positive way, would make sense to me.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think we're reaching that tipping point that again happened with YouTube, where if Roblox isn't in your brand management plan, you almost look remiss or kind of behind the times if, like you say, anywhere near a proportion of your audience are on the platform. And we know that very often for kids' media brands, they are even younger than you might think and perhaps skewing older than you might think. So I think it is coming to that point where it's as indispensable a part of your brand flywheel as perhaps YouTube has now become. So taking that kind of to the next level, I mean, what I love about Roblox, and that's happening in perhaps a much shorter time and at a faster pace than happened with YouTube, is how these activations are evolving. What are some of the really innovative ways that you see Roblox being used at the moment?
Yeah, so I think that, like, in terms of, especially from like a kids media standpoint, you know, where I'm seeing it for sure show up is definitely like theatrical and, you know, promotions of, you know, global movie launches. And so when you look at something like Kung Fu Panda, even Godzilla X Kong, going back to like Aquaman, like those big IP launches happened. And there were dedicated Roblox experiences built to promote those launches. And so that's sort of like one, you know, one part of it. In some cases, you've also seen those big kind of global launches. I'm thinking about like Trolls, that Illumination title migration, doing integrations into existing experiences such as Livetopia, which is a popular experience on the platform. So for sure, like, I think the theatrical marketing teams at big studios, especially as it pertains to kids titles, have figured out, okay, yes, like Roblox is part of our plans moving forward, right? Like that's already been established. I think on the like TV side, an interesting, you know, example was when Sonic launched Sonic Prime on Netflix, the premiere, you know, first episode was on, you know, sort of on Roblox first. It had like basically like an exclusive window. Can't remember if it was like 5 days, 7 days, right? But that was within the Sonic Speed Simulator experience on the platform. So, which gets about like 20 million visits a month pretty consistently. And so in that case, like, hey, not every brand is going to be able to do that, right? But if you have an existing game that's, you know, has strong traffic and you can put, you know, launch, use that as a launching pad for your, you know, new Netflix series, you know, that's really incredible. So I think that, like, you know, certainly it is really around typically like launching new IP, right? Trying to create a splash, really trying to drive awareness. And it helps when that launch is global, right? Because Roblox is a global platform, and, you know, that's part of the power of it, is being able to reach so many people at the same time all over the world. And so, you know, from that side, it's really been on like the marketing side, like movie launches, show launches, where most of the activity has been happening, which is a little different than what we were seeing a year and a half ago, you know, with just like Nickverse, right? And creating this always on sort of hub, which is, you know, for some companies will make sense, for really big companies, but it's also challenging because it's very, you know, time intensive, resource intensive, costly to create something, maintain it, keep it going, and keep it fresh and attracting, you know, new players.
Yeah, and I think that's, there's almost two ways that you can use it, in the sense that, as you said, you can use it as that almost kind of shine bright, but then acknowledge that it will go away once you've hit your targets. Kung Fu Panda 4, the obby being case in point, you know, it was there to sell tickets to get the opening weekend box office as high as possible, and certainly seems to have worked or have helped, given the numbers that Kung Fu Panda 4 achieved. But then there's the other side of things with this persistent experience. And again, much like, you know, you wouldn't go onto YouTube with only one episode of something or one piece of content. You need a whole year's worth of content and media plan, very much like that on Roblox. But for IP that have got maybe toy partners, I think it's a really interesting way to gather behavioral data as well. You know, if you have an IP, say Paw Patrol, and that's a bad example because I don't know if Paw Patrol has an official experience, but, you know, you would look at which characters are tracking within that experience, and that can really inform, in a way that Moonbug did with Cocomelon, subsequent episodes. You might find that one particular character is really tracking in the play within your Roblox experience, and you might create more episodes featuring that character. It can inform everything to do with your toy line from your toy partners. So there's two different ways that you can look at it, and both have their merits but require a different approach. And that really is what's interesting about Roblox, in that it can be used in these different ways, like you say, everything from an integration to a very much marketing first activation to something that's more persistent that you're going to use to kind of inform and drive narrative and maybe even toy sales.
Yeah, and I think, sorry, go. I was just going to add that I kind of, that as somebody that doesn't know loads about Roblox, that reminds me a bit of the dilemma that people often face with YouTube, particularly kind of early on, where you'd get brands that would use YouTube for a kind of quick flash campaign to build awareness, but then disappear. And then you'd have other brands that would see YouTube as an environment to build communities, have conversations, and kind of be present in that conversation, really.
Yeah, and I think I think the you know, certainly to a couple points. One, to the data that you're talking about, Joe, that you're able to get out of building and being active on Roblox. Certainly, again, like the geography data, right? Where is this resonating? Where are people showing up from? I think that can be super valuable. Certainly some sort of, you know, gender, age, right? Those types of demographic data is useful. Within an experience, yes, if you're making all things equal and you have like five different characters, right? And people can choose, you know, who are they choosing? For sure, that's really interesting data. I think like you mentioned Moonbug, like Moonbug has a blippy experience on the platform, and they're creating content that goes onto YouTube that is generated out of Roblox, right? And so when you think about like, oh yeah, Roblox and its connection to like a YouTube, right? Like they don't need to live in isolation, right? In fact, it's maybe where things are headed, that these silos kind of get taken down and the lines, you know, sort of disappear between sort of one platform and the other in terms of like content being shared. I know that you've done some work around this. And so to me, it's like, oh, for brands, like for brands, companies that are interested in this space, it can be daunting to say, oh, we need to build our Nickverse. Well, it's like, maybe not. Maybe that's not a first step, is like building your version of Nickverse that's going to cost hundreds of thousands, if not like $1 million to go and start. I think there's other ways to, you know, try to experiment, whether it's integrating into an existing experience, building UGC virtual items that people can purchase for their avatars to wear. And so all of that sort of lighter weight, faster, easier type of testing can help inform future growth. Like I wouldn't recommend starting with like the most difficult, you know, biggest thing, unless you're somebody like the BBC, which recently launched, and you're like, hey, we need to set up a presence here. We have to be here. If you're a bigger company like that, then I can see where it makes more sense.
Yeah, I think that's the misconception, is that actually activating on the platform is cost prohibitive. Now, if you do want to create a Nickverse, as you point out, it is for a lot of smaller media brands. But then there are little things that you can do. And using that test and learn approach, that little toe dip, as you've said, you know, that can really help you move along in smaller steps towards showing how the platform can work for you and your IP, and then potentially justify unlocking a bit more spend to go deeper into that next level.
Yeah, for sure.
Stephen, I had a question, which was, how do you stay on top of trends and changes in the Roblox community? Because it's kind of, because that feels a bit daunting to somebody that may not have all of that information. So kind of what's your strategy to stay on top of that?
Yeah, well, for me, I dedicate a good amount of time to do that. So I know that most people probably don't have like the time to go do that. I think, so for me personally, it's sort of a combination of like playing experiences, right? Going and visiting sort of the platform, seeing what's trending sort of on the homepage. But then on top of that, I collect data every month, both like on the branded side and just the overall side of what, you know, how many visits games are getting each month, and really tracking that and studying that and looking for those trends, looking to see what's sort of working, both on the game side as well as the UGC virtual item side. So I do a fair amount of work lift to figure that out. But for the average person who is maybe, whether you're new to Roblox or you know, have more experience, I think just spending time on the platform, right? Going and seeing what's there, seeing like, oh, this game is copying this other game, and like, whoa, this game is copying this, you know, anime IP or whatever it is, right? But if you never look at it, if you never open it, if you never hop into an experience, then you'll have no idea. So it helps to just sort of carve out some time, explore it. And better yet, if you do have kids or nieces or nephews who are active players, right, talking to them about it, seeing what they're finding interesting, because, you know, certainly they're sort of drawn to, attracted to seeing different things than, you know, older grownups are noticing or caring about.
Yeah. And when you do that, when you do the deep dive into that data and kind of into Roblox, are there any particularly surprising trends that you've discovered?
So I think like something recently is that I've been noticing is just like how new games are able to take off. I think that's been surprising to me. And you know, how just sort of how games cycle in and out of being popular and not being popular. Certainly there's a fair amount of like well-established the adopt me's, right, that have been around for years and have like billions of visits and are still super popular and really kind of, you know, command a large percentage of attention of players on the platform. But just seeing how trends are able, you know, new games are able to pop up. There was a game that came out last year called Obby, so which is short for obstacle course, but Obby, but you're on a bike. And it took this concept of like, oh yeah, you're just like a regular Obby, and then gave it a nice little twist. And so, oh, you're on a bike. And then like, you know, the goal is to like pass these levels, get better bikes, so you can go faster, you know, not crash, not fall off and die. And it's like, oh, wow. And then, you know, there's like, there's all of these sort of new variations of that. And so I really appreciate how there's some sort of tried and true genres of games, but every now and then there'll be some really cool twists that really breaks through.
Yeah, I think it's, I don't know if you've seen it, but I made a post on just that very thing this morning about how game genres are evolving. And yeah, it's almost like I teed you up, but Obby's was the subject of it because yeah, having seen that too, obstacle courses, well established, but then very, very quickly, Obby bops. And this is the interesting thing when you have a UGC platform, that's when the innovation and the creativity starts getting piled on to something that establishes as a foundation. And then it's like, okay, how can we mess around with this? How can we hack it? How can we add to it? And it's a really fascinating to see how it happens.
Yeah, and look, like I played Obby, but you're on a bike with my kids. And one of the first things they asked me is like, hey, what level are you on? Like, oh, okay, hey, you're here. You're, you know, on this sort of, you're sort of like 40, stage 40 out of 90 on this one particular like stage or whatever. And, you know, they were comparing where they were at and they're like, oh, how many times have you died? And it's like, oh, okay, I died this time, right? And that really speaks to the fact that like there is a high amount of like social activity that happens on the platform. So different than like YouTube, right, where it's really kind of like asynchronous viewing, right? You can go and hop into a Roblox game or Roblox experience at the same time as your friends, whether you're physically located next to each other or around the world from each other. And you can message each other within, you know, within the experience. If you're 13 plus and voice is enabled, there's that ability to chat there. You can also obviously like be texting or on the phone or whatever, Discord, you know, communicating with your friends. And so I think, yeah, one thing that we haven't touched on that's just worth mentioning that is how much the platform is sort of an evolution of social media. And it's maybe like not just a straight evolution, but again, it's like kind of combining these things, right? It's like combining gaming and social. And, you know, because I have an avatar that represents me that hops from different experience to different experience, right? I can see my friend's avatar. We can feel like we're in the same space. So it kind of gets to that sense of presence, right? Being together. And I think that is a big driver of why we see such, you know, deep engagement, 2.5 hour engagement time, right? Because it's like, oh, I'm not just like playing a game. Like, I love this one game, right? It's like, oh no, we're going and hanging out together. We're going and building a boat together, or we're trying to escape, or trying to, you know, beat this one stage. So some games are more specifically promote like co-play, where others are like, oh no, we can play alongside each other. We're not necessarily working on the same initiative. But yeah, just wanted to call out that, you know, how important social is in terms of the platform's kind of DNA.
Yeah, and I think that's the big difference. We've spoken a lot about parallels to YouTube. That's the big difference, and actually almost makes it complementary to YouTube. And I'm a big proponent of the two working hand in hand. But this idea that it's very much active, lean in, you're with your friends, you're doing things together. You don't necessarily, you know, have to drop into an experience and then go on an adventure together. A lot of experiences are just predicated on hanging out, doing stuff, you know, trying on new outfits. Again, I spoke to the creators of Jailbreak recently, and, you know, super popular experience. Gameplay is about going on heists, but actually they have regular car meets. People just drop into Jailbreak and have car meets, nothing to do with actually going on a heist. So again, these kind of social experiences or these social activities and behaviors are popping up because of that nature of the platform. Like you say, you can see where your friends are and you can go and join them. And that's a really interesting thing.
Yeah, and I think the where brands sometimes make a mistake is they assume, oh yeah, because people hang out in some games and don't actually play, we can just create a game where people will hang out. And it's like, no, people won't hang out if there's nothing to play, if there's no reason. You have to give them a reason to show up. If it's so successful and it turns out, oh yeah, people like just hanging out there, well, great. But you can't start there. The games like Jailbreak, yes, it's able to have that because it's a wildly successful game, right? That's built a community where people enjoy spending time there. I'm sure it looks amazing. There's a lot of different, you know, depth. There's so much depth to it that like, oh yeah, if you'd say, oh, I don't want to play right now, I just want to hang out, that's perfectly fine. But I would say, hey, you know, I've seen brands are like, oh yeah, like social space and we'll hang out. It's like, no, that's not going to work.
Yeah. And I guess with the Jailbreak thing, there's almost an enjoyment about the community being able to sort of twist the experience in a direction that the creators never intended. It's kind of not as fun if the creator intended it to be a hangout room from the start.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that plays into what we know kids love is kind of hacking stuff. You're told to go over here and do this one thing, so they'll go in completely the opposite direction and try it a different way. And again, that's what makes working in kids media so interesting. You know, let's talk about UGC again, something else that is really, really important to young people. Well, to almost everyone on the platform, but, you know, in particular to young people who are perhaps experimenting with their identity. So, you know, some of the digital fashion and kind of accessories and wearables on Roblox are just crazy, crazy creative. You know, what do you see in terms of trends in UGC? Because I know it's something recently you've been diving into.
Yeah. So look, I think that UGC and when I think about UGC, there's certainly clothing, right? So this is everything from like pants, shirts, jackets, to accessories. So these could be backpacks, these could be beanies, but they could also be things that you wouldn't necessarily see very often in real life. So these could be wings, right? This could be like a shoulder pet. And this was interesting because I was actually just at Disneyland a couple weeks ago, and as I was walking around the park, I saw people with shoulder pets. So these were baby Groot shoulder pets or Grogu shoulder pets. And the way it works is like it's a little tiny stuffed animal that has a magnet and then a little detachable magnet. So you basically clip it to like your backpack or just underneath your jacket or something. And then, you know, baby Groot is on your shoulder as you're walking around the park. And, you know, that sort of blew my mind because I've seen shoulder pets on Roblox and I see that and I say, oh, nobody would ever wear that in real life. Like there's no way like you would ever wear a shoulder pet. And then I was wrong. And then it's like I see that. And I'm like, wow, you know, if you see it at Disneyland, you could probably see that at Comic-Con. You could see it at some sort of other fan focused setting. Maybe, hey, before you know it, you'll see that at like a sporting event. Can you see your favorite player as a shoulder pet as you're walking around some, you know, some match? So I think that like there's when I kind of bucket what works on Roblox and what's trending, sometimes there's items that seem more fantastical, that seem more outrageous and audacious that you wouldn't necessarily expect people to wear in real life, but really look amazing and sort of, you know, on your avatar and help you stand out. And you can, you know, some of those items might be not even clothing, but they could be hair, right? Like you can very quickly swap out your hair on Roblox. And so, you know, I think that like that it's interesting how this place to be able to be totally off the wall and wild with your appearance, you know, in this virtual space, you know, has the potential to like really also influence how people show up in real life. And I think it's going to be gradual. I think it's going to take time, but it's really just allowing people to really express themselves in a variety of ways. And those, you know, it is very much like can be shaped by like physical trends. So like Y2K as like, you know, a sort of fashion, you know, trend was super popular, like in real life and also on Roblox. And so, you know, I think there's definitely like a back and forth kind of dialogue between, you know, what's happening in real life and what's happening in Roblox.
Yeah. And it feels like, I mean, I can imagine that in some ways it's a social signal, isn't it? That for the people with the shoulder characters in Disneyland, they're sending a social signal that other people will get that understand kind of how that operates in the metaverse.
Yeah, it's if you know, you know, isn't it? It's really that kind of social signal. I feel like we could speak all day, so perhaps we'll come back and we will revisit Roblox round two at some point. But Steve, it's been fascinating. I think what we should do is just end on kind of what's the one hot tip you've got that's in your mind at the moment for Roblox? Is it something that you're seeing coming through? Is it a tip that you, or a piece of advice you always give to people considering activating on the platform? What's that golden nugget that Steve DiPianco can leave us with?
Oh boy, no pressure. Yeah. Look, I mean, I would say that right now it's just a matter of like, just like learning, right? So many people, I think it can feel like overwhelming. And so again, like really take a look at the discover page on Roblox. So when you log in, you get, there's like a homepage, but there's just a tab that says discover. And it's broken down into some really interesting categories. So there's like most engaging, like top earning, you know, like tycoon. So there's different genres it'll break down, 17 plus, but Roblox has a say in what categories show up in what order. So this really is an inside look into how Roblox, what they're trying to push, what they're really, you know, how they're trying to grow their, you know, audience and where, you know, they're pushing more towards revenue in some cases or a certain type of, you know, functionality. So by kind of poking in and out of the Discover page alone, you can see not only the games, what's like trending, what's performing, and, you know, it might be the same. There might be some difference, you know, month to month, but it really gives you an inside look into like how Roblox is thinking about their platform, what they're pushing. And so, yeah, that would be one sort of bit of advice, especially for those who want to kind of get up that curve in terms of understanding the platform.
I think that's super advice. And I would then add to that, to look up your Metaverse Marcom newsletter, which is always a super informative read. Okay, well, thank you for joining us, Steve. That's been super, super informative. Again, I think there's such is the pace of change on Roblox, and we could regroup again in a few months and we'll be talking about an entirely different set of evolutions of game genres and trends. So let's make sure we do that. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And thank you for tuning in to the Kids Media Club podcast. We hope you enjoyed our discussion about Roblox. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time. There we go.